Welcome to Top 5, a show where we count things down. We put them in 4-4 time, sometimes 3-4 time, but never 8-8 time, because that's just crazy time. This week on Top 5, our Top 5 film scores is suggested by one of our listeners. I need to write down who suggests these each week so we know who to blame in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Top 5 film scores.
Slappy.
My number 5 is actually a brand new one because it's based on music that we've heard since the 70s. And that is the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm hooked on a feeling.
Ooga chaka, ooga, ooga.
There's something about, I guess, somebody wrote a really good article online over the last couple of weeks talking about, I think maybe it was over at Bleeding Cool, where they were talking about how the reason why Guardians of the Galaxy works is because of the soundtrack, because the soundtrack is playing upon our nostalgia that time period.
Sure. Absolutely.
And certainly if you grew up and you're as old as Matthew and I, or you're familiar and listen to older music, mm-hmm. you've heard all the songs from, you know, the Jackson 5, from, you know, all the
Blue
different
Swede.
Groups. Yeah, all the different groups that are represented here, that it takes you back to a different time. It takes you back to a time when Star Wars was a cool thing.
Yeah.
And because we're thinking that Star Wars, you know, this reminds us of the time when Star Wars was popular, thus we kind of say that, oh, this is as cool as Star Wars. And that's me saying this article, but they were talking about how nostalgia really impacts the people's like of this movie.
Yeah. The 70s was kind of a sci-fi renaissance, and this movie is kind of in a roundabout way invoking that.
Yeah.
Well, you know the meta statement there. The first appearance of Star-Lord was the summer of 76.
Did you buy your first real six string?
No. Shut up. Brian Adams.
That's how much he hates him. It's like
but
it has
Star-Lord. It travels through
it's
space
not like
and
a
time.
Month later.
I know. It's like it seems like just a few minutes ago, but more importantly, Star-Lord comes out of that era, and I don't know if it was intentional, but all of the music that he loves comes from the era that the character in comics actually originated.
That's
so
interesting.
It's kind of a neat statement for me anyway.
I think it would be great if the next Superman movie had him listening to music from the 30s. It just goes to show what a huge square he is.
Yep. Batman's only listening to people, I only love you, on a gramophone.
Matthew, what do you have for your number 5?
My number 5 is possibly the most iconic noises, musics ever anywhere for anything. And we actually discussed this movie not too long ago, I think, on our other podcast, Zach on Film. But everyone will know what I mean when I, and my 10-year-old kid has known for years what I mean when I go, dun, 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 just that weird bass note. Salsa Shark, yes. We're going to need a bigger boat. Yeah, but when you get right down to it, all of the score for that movie, Broken Shark, they couldn't do what they were doing. They were rewriting the movie on the fly, making stuff up. Nothing was quite working, and I'm pretty sure that everyone was drunk, except maybe Richard Dreyfuss, and he was hopped up on goofballs. But when they put it all together, I think that part of the reason that movie is so transformative is A, you know, brilliant editing, brilliant use of what they had, but also that amazing score that builds the tension from that very beginning where the girl goes skinny dipping and you're looking out and it's like, oh no, look out for Jaws, skinny dipping naked girl. And the music goes, dun, you know, you're going to die. You write that girl off. The second that bass note kicks in, you're like, we're done here. I'm sorry, Chrissy Watkins, but you are no more. That's why my number 5 is Jaws, 1977, I think, 6, 7, 7,
6, I want to say 76.
Seven? Same year as Star-Lord.
Yep.
Jaws Rodrigo, bought his first real six string that year.
75.
Cool.
Rodrigo, what do you have for your number 5?
My number 5 is a number 2.
What?
And I don't mean... as opposed to a number 1.
don't get me started. I'm trying to hide the giggle fest.
So yeah, My number five is the soundtrack score for Kill Bill Volume 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By Robert Rodriguez, as is credited, but really various, because it is a huge hodgepodge of music, some of which comes from other movies. And the Kill Bill theme has, or the Kill Bill, both of the scores for them, or the soundtracks for them, have always made me question that. Is like, is it okay to borrow music from other movies? It's like, wow, that scene sure was powerful, largely because of that song. I'm going to put it in my movie. Seems terrible.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, Quentin Tarantino kind of does that.
Oh, he's said, he's like, if people ask him, I think it was at cons or something, he's like, why do you do this? He's like, I'm not going to let my vision for a scene be ruined by some guy making his own music. I'm just going to pick whatever music I want and pay the rights and then put it in my movie.
Yep. And he does that. Yeah. And it seems insane, but clearly it works, largely because a lot of the movies that he picks them from are not that well known. So people just attribute that to them.
Yeah.
Now, Robert Rodriguez does have a few original songs that he either did himself or with his band. And he actually has a rendition of Malagueña Salerosa, which is really impressive. It's like this really fast rock version of it, without being like the ubiquitous like ska or punk version of a song, which is just so mundane as to not even necessitate a cover. Yeah, his version of it is really great. It's the sort of thing that, generally speaking, I can actually pop on the soundtrack and actually listen it all the way from beginning to end, which, with a lot of soundtracks, you know, when you get into, like, the running through the catacomb scene, I'm just like, well, that's not really an interesting piece of music. It's just kind of a mildly suspenseful thing. But, yeah, Kill Bill Volume 2, my number five.
Cool. Sweet. And Zach, what do you have for your number five?
Mine comes from a recent movie. Mine is from Looper that just came out two, three years ago. I found the score interesting when I was just watching it, because it's like has this really like weird like metallic kind of feel, like this industrial feel, which kind of the movie has to itself also. But then I actually got the film on Blu-ray and I was watching all the extras. And the director is Rian Johnson. He might know, who just got signed on to do Star Wars. His brother did the score for this movie. And a lot of it, what he did is just like recorded actual, he went like to industrial plants and just Nat sound stuff, car doors, weird metal clanging, and then just took them into Pro Tunes and was like remixing all these weird like metal sounds.
Wow.
So it's just an interesting story. And I had kind of like the feel, kind of felt the movie. It's one of the few soundtrack scores that I actually own and will listen to regularly while I'm at work or writing or something. So I kind of enjoy it. It's not certainly like a famous score or anything, but I certainly enjoy it.
Excellent. So number four for me, you know, I thought about American Graffiti because I really love the music of the 50s and 60s. And it kind of tied in a little bit with Guardians of the Galaxy, but that really was probably more of a number six on my list. A movie soundtrack that really kind of hits me from like the 90s, quote unquote, the American Pie soundtrack. That movie is just full of, what has it got? It's got Bare Naked Ladies. It's probably got Third Eye Blind. It's got just about every Green Day is probably in there
Everything from the 90s.
Everything from the 90s is in the American Pie soundtrack.
Sum 41.
Yep. And there's just something about it that's just poppy and catchy and is just fits perfect. For that movie. Now, I think the only movie that the only song that's not in there is Good Riddance. But I do like that American Pie soundtrack just because of all of the different bands that are represented from that time
Smash
period.
Smash Mouth.
Yeah, that are in there. And it's fun. It's fun poppy type.
Let's see. I got it here. Third Eye Blind, Tonic, Blink 182, yeah. Sugar Ray,
yeah.
Super Transatlantic, Dishwalla, Dan Wilson. Wilson of Semisonic, Shades Apart, Bachelor Number One, Goldfinger, Bic Runga,
now you're just making
The Loose Nuts, and the Atomic Fireballs.
Bare Naked Ladies was in there too.
The following songs were included in the film but were not featured in the soundtrack. Sexorama Band, The Ventures, Bare Naked Ladies, The Brian Johnstown Massacre, Third Eye Blind Again, Oleander, Hole, Everclear, Harvey Danger, Duke Daniel, Simon and Garfunkel, Fatboy Slim.
Yeah.
They represents Taylor, Etta James, Lonnie Rowe, because obviously late, isn't it?
Yep.
Nora Jones, Marvin Gaye, Maria Maldauer, and Simple Minds.
Yeah. Jeez. So there you go. Look at that. That's a great combination of music.
List.
It is, and it's fun.
It is. It's super 90s.
And that is why it is on my list as the super 90s soundtrack.
Super 90s.
American Pie.
The 90s that ever did 90s.
Well, there's probably one more, and I'm trying to look for it real quick. That's probably even more 90s.
She's
than
All
that.
That.
I thought about She's All That and Can't Hardly Wait, yep. But I'm thinking about what was the frickin' one
things
with
Things I Hate About You.
No, it was the one with he sells his soul to the devil, and the devil's played by
Monkey
really
Bone.
Hot British.
Oh, Bedazzled.
Bedazzled, the remake of Bedazzled with Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley.
Yes, I'm going to say that soundtrack, even though that came out in 2000, is more 90s than
American
Pie.
Yeah, that makes sense. Both, I think, both American Pie, which when did it came out? 1999? Yep,
American
99.
Pie. Yeah.
So 1999 is like, there's a reason why all the great songs from the 90s are in the American Pie soundtrack, and that's because it came out in 1999. So all these songs were already out.
Yeah.
Or the majority of them were. There aren't a lot. It's not like, oh, what's a good example? Like a lot of Dirty Dancing, right? Mm-hmm. Time of My Life is from Dirty Dancing. It was like launched concurrently.
Yeah.
And that song is from this movie. American Pie was just like, oh, that's a good song. That's a good song.
But certainly Can't Hardly Wait and Bedazzled would be two movies that fall right in there.
Yeah.
Matthew, what do you have for your number four?
My number four is one of those scores that if I were being hateful and rude, I could say it's actually in several different movies because it's done by a musician and guy who works with the director, and they've done a lot of films together. And by the time this movie came out, they'd done like five in a row that sounded very similar, and they all sounded like this. But 1990, with Edward Scissorhands, Tim Burton and Danny Elfman really hit just like an utter sweet spot for me. And you know, it was the year I was 20, so it may be a romance thing for me too. But you take all of that and you tie it together with that weird Stepford glow in the dark neighborhood. The only movie in the film that isn't Danny Elfman going is Tom Jones. And there's like four Tom Jones songs in there. So you've got Edward's music, which is like that, and then you get down into the city and everything is like, it's not unusual. It's this weird agglomeration. But even though it sounds a little bit like parts of Beetlejuice and it sounds a little bit like parts of Batman, this is really the point where I think they kind of hit a synthesis where it's more than the sum of its parts. And you can sit there and you can hum this music and not know what it is. And then think, oh, right, that's the scene from when Edward is running away from Anthony Michael Hall, who grew up to be Judd Nelson. You know, it's really cool for me. And it's interesting to see them do something that feels so familiar and yet so new all at the same time.
Yeah.
My number four, Edward Scissorhands, 1990. Good movie, too, actually.
Mr. Rodrigo.
Huh? What? Me? Okay.
Yes.
Let's see. My number four is from a movie that I really like, and the reason why it's on this list is because the movie asks a lot of its soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
It says this movie has to be about futuristic stuff, ancient, it has to have some whimsy, it has to have future pop music in it as well. There's going to be mundane stuff that happens in a future apartment, and there's going to be the fate of the universe also. I'm talking about The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah.
Which has
that
a really,
awesome soundtrack.
Really spectacular soundtrack. And again, it's because there's so much stuff in this movie, right? There's like group of alien mercenaries and like evil capitalism, and also an ancient pyramid and a bad guy that is like an evil sun monster. Like, there's just so much going on, and a performance by a future alien pop diva. Like, there is just so much stuff going on in this movie, and the soundtrack just rises to the occasion every time. It is a complete soundtrack.
The diva dance, or is it the aria, or is it the diva dance? Well, both, I think they're both of them back to back.
Yeah, they go back to back. So the first one is when she does like her
the aria.
Big long operatic one, and then it turns into a pop thing. And they like sample their voice, and they like
I think,
but you know,
that,
you're, it's supposed to be like her voice box is like different from humans, so she can actually do that, right?
I think the thing that blew me away is I saw this in a really good theater, and I hadn't ever seen anything like what Luc Besson had brought, and I'm just sitting there being blown away, and then you get to that sequence where they're mixing operatic with high intense action with gunfire and flips and kicks and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there with my jaw on the floor going, holy crap.
Yeah.
And Fifth Element for a long time rocketed up there to be one of my all time favorite movies. Still up there very high.
Yeah.
I may have to watch that again.
Oh,
I wonder
if
the boy is old enough to watch The Fifth Element.
It's on Netflix. There is, there's not frontal nudity, but there's some nudity.
I think he'd be all right with that because, you know, that movie was actually, I think, written when Luc was like 7 years old, or the concept for it came to him when he was like 7 or 8 years old. So, that's a good movie. Good soundtrack.
Yeah,
good selection.
Yeah.
There.
Eric Serra, I think, is the...
All right, Zach, what do you have for your number four?
My number four is... the soundtrack from Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. I really like it. It's a good soundtrack. Even if you'd like take out like the actual music they actually use in it, like Fight the Power, all that good stuff, and you just like straight up listen to the score,
it is
really good. It's some like crazy saxophone playing. You can feel like the emotional buildup of the movie if you're straight up just listening to the music. You can really picture the scenes if you're listening to it. I listen to it regularly at work. I'll pop it up on the Spotify and listen to it. It's just really, I like got into scores over the last couple years, and we'll just listen to them regularly. This is like if you like jazz or kind of like a mellow thing, or just some crazy saxophone playing. You totally need to listen to this, even if you've never seen the movie. It's a good listen.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. We are about halfway through. We're up to our number threes. And I talked about American Graffiti as music from the 50s and 60s. The Guardians of the Galaxy is movie from the 70s. American Pie, music from the 90s. You may be thinking, Stephen, where's your music from the 80s?
Yeah. You love the 80s.
I love the 80s. Because
I love the 80s.
You can't condense the 80s soundtracks into just one item. They have to span across my next three choices.
Well, of course. Wow.
And of course, number three coming in right at the end of the 80s with Alan Menken and Howard Ashman's The Little Mermaid soundtrack. Almost you can look at any Disney animated movie with maybe the exception of Aladdin. And I had to think long and hard about Aladdin. But that came out in the 90s anyway. But this movie is so perfect in its execution of mixing the music with the story. If you watch Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, it just is like, okay, narrative, musical number, narrative, musical number. This is talking about, hey man, you really got the hots for this girl, you better kiss her now. And it's played into the narrative, and it's a song. And of course, these guys coming from Broadway understand how you tell a Broadway musical number, and they do it beautifully and wonderfully in The Little Mermaid.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no showstoppers, by which I mean not songs that are really good, but things that just literally grind the plot to a halt to sing a song.
No, there's not. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. This is where we really start to see.
Motivated.
Yes. That's where we start to see this Broadway style of musical storytelling. Very much like Phantom of the Opera. Very much like Beauty and the Beast. You know, it just does it so well. And again, like I said, if you go back and look at Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Cinderella, any of these, It is, we've got some story, then we got to stop and we got to do a musical number where they talk about Happy Feet or whatever the hell they're talking about in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Happy Feet, I think it's a different movie.
I think they're talking about mining.
Well, they do that too. There's like six or seven. There's like six or seven different musical numbers in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and they're all just like, they're thrown in because we don't, the reason why they were done back then is because they didn't know if audiences would be willing to sit through 75 minutes of just straight story.
Of a cartoon.
So yeah, of cartoon. So we better figure out a way to mix this up. Let's mix in music because the Merry Melodies and the Silly Symphonies are really a big deal. So we'll go and do that and silly just break it up. That's what Disney's stuff was called, Silly Symphonies.
Silly Symphonies.
And Merry Melodies was actually a knockoff. Was Warner Brothers' take on it. But when you hit Little Mermaid and it's from the, you know, from the very moment where you first meet Ariel all the way to the end when, you know, there's just song and dance going on and it's perfect. Even the little Le Poisson song is wonderful. But my favorite though is Kiss the Girl out of that entire soundtrack, Kiss the Girl. But if you had to say, Stephen, you can't pick Little Mermaid, then Aladdin would certainly be on that list. But I figured maybe there was somebody else here that might've had Aladdin on their list. But, the Little Mermaid, my number three soundtrack of my favorite film scores. Matthew, what do you have for your number three?
The part where Ariel started rapping like Nicki Minaj was also cool. My number three, and I actually had a problem with the word score in this, because to me a score is like something big and huge and orchestral, like a John Williams or a, you know, what's his name with the guy,
John Philip Sousa.
But when you really break it down, there's some of that in my number three, as well as a little bit of what I like to refer to as the jukebox style. And of course, this is something that's come up many times for me. Heavy Metal, 1981, Canadian animated movie. Somewhat embarrassing in a lot of parts, and there are parts of it that are clearly prurient and aimed at 15-year-old boys. But the use of music,
look at the size of my dork,
stellar music. And the best part is there are parts of that movie where you hear pieces of music that are so perfectly suited to the moment. And then you go, if you listen to the album and you hear the song, only that 12-second piece of the song is appropriate. The rest of the song is this bizarre thing.
Yeah.
But the part where it's like, dun, 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 that's perfectly suitable. And then you get to the last segment. The last segment, of course, is with Tarna fighting the evil overarching overlord of the piece.
Yeah.
And it's fully orchestrated, screaming brass and woodwinds, howling this beautiful, almost, you know, it's Wagnerian in its scope, just amazing stuff. And she flies into the air and she raises her sword and you hear like the howling of angels from the sky and the Lochnar scream, no, and the music goes, ah! My God, it's amazing. It's given me goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah.
So
cool, man.
Even though the movie is a little bit embarrassing sometimes, it's totally worth it. Yeah, near the end.
I mean, there's something about that movie that you have to sit down and just appreciate for what it is.
You do.
And then be happy that,
yeah,
even today it still stands. It still stands in its style and
the
its creativity and what they were trying to do.
Worked, still work. Harry Canyon still works from front to back.
But
front
you also, you also have to be very pleased that that movie still stands up while Heavy Metal 2000 just falls right on its face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the problem with your sequels, man.
Yep.
That's the problem with your sequels.
Rodrigo, what do you have for number three?
My number three is a John Williams score.
Hey, all right.
Yay.
So, there's
Zach, you're next. Oh, sorry.
There's a movie that is very important to me in a lot of ways, that has a John Williams score. And, that movie is about dinosaurs.
Oh yeah.
Yes. and that movie is Jurassic Park.
Nice.
Yep. That's right. And, there's this great thing floating around on YouTube where it's like somebody doing the Jurassic Park theme with like crappily on like a melodica or something like that.
Yeah.
It is amazing. I laughed at that for like an hour and a half. And the reason why is because the score is so epic, so recognizable.
Right.
Like if they had done that with But I don't know.
Hip hop.
No, no, no. Like some other movie that maybe has a big score. You know, like I don't know. I actually I don't want to say because I'd hate to like
Danny
throw
Elfman.
Something out and it have it be on your
have
things,
it be
right?
my next choice.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly. So I'm not gonna say it. But again, part of the reason why that's so funny is because the Jurassic Park, especially that theme that Steven sang a little bit ago, is so recognizable that you can make fun of it and people will know what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Any time that a dinosaur factors in, if you sing that little song, people will know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So yes, Jurassic Park, one of like a completely orchestral score that is really fantastic, not just for its very recognizable parts, but also because... it's a good score for a movie. I mean, it's...
yeah, it is a nice...
It's John Williams doing what he does, which is, you know, scary music moments, fanfare.
Well, he... I'll save it. Yeah.
Okay.
Zach, what do you have?
Wait, fun fact about Jurassic Park. My cousin got married a couple years ago, and his music before came in was the score for Jurassic Park.
Wow.
I thought you were going to say he married a triceratops.
No.
I thought you were going to say that Jeff Goldblum showed up at the wedding and they talked him into... You heard the story where Jeff Goldblum was the plus one for one of the guests at this wedding, and the bride and groom came up to him after the ceremony and everything. They were like, we're just thinking about this. Maybe you may not want to participate, but wouldn't it be great if the entire wedding party and you... we're all running towards the camera, and then we Photoshop the dinosaur in the background. And he's like, yeah, okay. And so you go and look, and it's like the wedding party running with Jeff Goldblum in the front running, and there's a dinosaur that they Photoshopped in the background. So.
Nice.
So if you'd like to meet that man who got married to the Jurassic Park movie, you can go to the Woodland Park Dinosaur Museum where he and his wife like run that thing. So there
nice.
You go.
Nice.
Anyways,
right.
My number...
Three.
number three. Yes. Number three. Is another movie that just recently came out. Steven and I have gushed about it. We finally got Matthew to watch it, and he loved it also. It was Her.
Oh,
came out last year. Fantastic film. And
have you seen it, Rodrigo?
Nope.
Gotta watch it.
The score was done by the lead singer of Arcade Fire and their producer. And one of their tracks off of their last album... Super Symmetry was the lead. Like, if you ever watched the trailer for Her, it's the song that plays in the trailer, which I consider to be like the best song off that album. And they do the rest of it. It has this weird, like, kind of, for lack of a better word, and you only get this if you actually know what the album's called, Reflection, based on their last movie, like the kind of the theme in a lot of their songs, like dealt with technology, but you really know that if you like watch the music videos and stuff.
Yeah.
So just interesting how like they tied in with that, and you know like Joaquin Phoenix sings a nice little ditty in there. That's a nice, nice little moment in the film. It's a really good, score and soundtrack, and I dig it a lot.
So now we're up to our number twos. Back to John Williams. Mm-hmm. Yeah. John Williams is the king of the leitmotif.
Yes.
Just let's bring this back again and again and again and again, and. When we talk about Darth Vader, the Emperor's March, when we talk about the Star Wars theme, when we talk about Han and Leia's little bit, he captures that again and again and again in Star Wars. And more specifically, if we're talking soundtracks, because one could argue that Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and all the others are simply derivatives of
one super
soundtrack. So Star Wars, the very first movie. I have as my number two just because it is just amazing in its cinematic scope. I mean, from the very moment where you have the you just know that you're in this widescreen space. And if you listen to it in a great stereo mix, it feels like you are in the openness of space and everything is just folding around you onto this little tiny screen as you watch the titles roll by and you get taken down to a little tiny planet.
Yes. That moment where Luke is looking up at the moons and you hear that.
Yeah.
And then it swells and you're just like, you can feel his heart breaking. He wants off that stupid backwater world. And the music is telling me this. It's like,
Yeah. So John Williams, my number two for Star Wars, A New Hope, or first movie, however you want to call it.
Star Wars.
Matthew, what do you
have? I just call it episode IV.
Matthew, what do you have for your number two?
Into your bloodstream. Well, it was Star Wars.
That's all right. You can still have it there.
No. And I'll tell you why. You remember what I said a moment ago about whether a score counted as a score? Yeah. Something that you said made me change my mind to something that I had pushed off my list because I didn't think it counted as a score. many years
Gettysburg
ago.
Gettysburg Address? Four scores?
I was married to a lovely, tall woman who sometimes has red hair and is very, very tolerant of me being a jackwagon. And most of the time when we see a movie, we see totally different movies. We'll go see something and I'll see a rollicking action picture and she'll see a big dumb thing. Or she'll see like a super awesome, sweet, kind, you know, romantical movie. And I'll see two idiots wandering around. But when we went in 2001 to see the movie Moulin Rouge,
we saw the same film. That was on my list. It honestly was. Yeah. I had to think long and hard about taking that off. That's
something that I had it off the list and I had to bring it back, especially when, you know, you already had the Star Wars, because I'm like, this is so amazing. And they usually when you have like that jukebox style where a song just pops up, it's not what they call what Rodrigo taught me. It's called diegetic. It's not part of the scene. But in this movie, nearly all of the music, since it takes place in a dance hall during the creation of a musical that then actually becomes the film, all of this music is diegetic. And most importantly, they're repurposing pop music in basically what's a kind of an operatic reworking of La Traviata. So you get to the point where you have that juxtaposition of a police song with a classic tango. And you have the one guy singing, then you have Ewan McGregor screaming his guts out in the streets. Mm-hmm. It's amazingly powerful stuff. I love that movie. I love all of the music. The great disappointment of my life is that the soundtrack album for that movie is not the stuff that you hear in the film.
Yeah, it is.
It's not all of it. And most importantly, it's not the same version that you hear in the movie. So there are songs on the soundtrack that are reworked versions or studio versions of what we hear in the movie that isn't exactly the same. So it's kind of a heartbreaker for me. Or some of them are like medleyed all up together. But I think that point where Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman, neither of whom are English, both of whom are faking an English accent, are singing that medley of songs with the word love and fighting back and forth at each other.
Yeah.
That's
it's incredibly or something like that. Is what it's called.
It's incredibly meta. It's incredibly, oh, I know that. That's a Kiss song. But it works within the story and it makes sense for them to be having this little fight back and forth, this competition of, are you going to fall for me? No, I'm not going to fall for you. Yeah, you are, because I said so. No, I'm not. And here's a song that says it. It's really cool. I love the way the music is used. It's a great movie as well. My number two, Moulin Rouge, which I think is French for like red windmill.
We did a Zach on film on Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, we did.
A long time ago.
If you'd like to hear us go very in-depth into the jukebox musical, find the Moulin Rouge episode of Zach on Film.
That's one of the first, isn't it?
It's an early one.
Very earliest. It seems like forever ago now.
Yeah, that medley you're thinking of, Matthew, is called the Elephant Love Medley.
Nice, because it's about love, and it takes place in an elephant.
Yep.
Literally in an elephant.
It's got All You Need Is Love, I Was Made for Loving You, One More Night. Yeah. Pride in the name of love.
Love is.
Don't leave me this way. Spirit. Silly love songs. Up where we belong. Heroes. I'll always love you. Your song. You can tell everybody.
I love that moment.
That this is your song.
I love the moment at the end.
You can tell everybody that all of these are your song.
Yeah. Where he's stalking out and she sings her big moment and he's stalking out. And then he turns and he sings his reprise and the whole audience turns and it's just like, and then they both start just belting it out. God, that's an amazing moment. That is an incredible moment on film.
And they're really singing.
Makes you forgive Baz Luhrmann for everything wrong he's done.
Oh, well, come on now. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number two?
My number two is The Matrix.
Matrix.
And here's the thing about The Matrix. Matrix actually has two soundtracks.
Yeah.
It has the score and it has its like pop soundtrack.
Yeah.
And the score is really fantastic. It's a, it's exactly what you want in your weird techno fantastical allegory for working a desk job. And also, it is a great soundtrack for an action movie. The popular soundtrack is also great. It is a great collection of electronic music that was out.
I probably had that
in the 90s. And it is, it does also pick and choose from like previous stuff that was already out, but also, if not introduced, then popularized a few things. And I remember I picked it up at some point, and I remember hearing bits from the Matrix soundtrack probably for the next 5 years. Just those songs were good, like either ambient techno or just like straight up like exciting dance music and stuff. Like the Matrix came out in 1999, I think. And from then on, you kept hearing things from its soundtrack till about probably 2005.
Until the end of the third movie.
Yeah, pretty much. So yes, for me, I guess a bit of a cheat. It's actually two, like the sandwiched soundtrack of the Matrix.
I count it. I count it. All right.
Well, allow it.
Zach, what do you have for your number two?
My number two is an interesting soundtrack because there's almost nothing on it. My number two is the soundtrack from Red State, Kevin Smith's horror movie. The thing is that like there is no backing music to the film. There's like there's this, a lot of silence except when Michael Parks, as his character, sings like two or three times in the movie. He sings like, the first time we meet him, he's like singing a hymn by himself in this church. And then I think he sings one more time, and then in the end credits, he's, spoilers, in jail, and he's, like, singing to himself, like, to comfort himself, and anytime he sings,
it's creepy.
It is terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
It is horrible. Terrifying. It sends chills up your spine. It is horrible, and it makes the movie so much better that there is nothing else besides his creepy singing throughout it.
I think at one point during Kevin Smith's Red State podcast, didn't he release that song in one of the podcasts and said, take a listen to this? And it's just like, I think what in the heck is this movie about?
Oh yeah, before like the movie was out. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then when I got the film, I got like a download of like Michael Parks like singing stuff and like did some like just like some normal songs, and then like he sang a couple of the hymns.
Oh, that's cool.
Creepy.
But that's why the ending of that movie is so great, because the last thing we hear in that movie is someone yelling at him to shut the F up.
Yeah.
That's such a great ending. You're like, I've been wanting to
Kevin
say
Smith.
That to him all
it's
movie.
Kevin Smith.
It's Kevin Smith doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's now we are ready for our number ones. And my number one, once again, John Williams, movie of the 80s, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just like Jurassic Park, just like Star Wars, there's nothing.
Oh, wait.
That's Star Wars, dude.
I don't know how Indiana Jones goes.
Dun 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 dun. That's all you need to know.
Da da da. Oh wait, no, that's Superman.
Da 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 dun.
Dun 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 dun.
When it comes down to it, if Raiders of the Lost Ark can be on my list, it'll be on my list, and I think everybody knows why. It's the greatest movie of all time. And John Williams did the soundtrack
for it. And everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that. What do you have for your number one, Matthew?
My number one is on my list for the same GD reason. 1979's The Black Hole. One of the last movies made in the American film system that actually had a musical overture that played before and after. Oh. And it is really an amazing kind of thing because it combines weird kind of quasi-futuristic circa 1979 spacey noises. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And then it has this wild bit where it's just all brass going wah-wah-wah-wah. And of course, you know, the movie ends with this metaphorical version to heaven/hell. And the music is so perfect in that hell sequence where we're like, ah, oh, it's a burning and there's everywhere corpses, and he's trapped in a burning robot for eternity. And oh man, I'm sure glad Walt didn't live to see this. But that music is amazing. And when I was 9 years old, when this movie came out, I was heavily affected by it to the point where I watched the movie and recorded the film off of scrambled HBO, where you got only the audio feed back in the day. Steven will tell you what I'm talking about.
I didn't know, because I lived out in the country. We did not have cable. We had to get everything off of Ariel. So I did not get any cable television until I was in college.
Scrambled HBO, you'd get audio, and the audio would be relatively clear, but the picture would be all frazzled up. Yeah,
I've seen it before.
And you'd have the thing where the music would be, you'd have interference and breakthrough, but I recorded it so I could listen to that overture and listen to that music, because, oh my gosh, just amazing. I don't think it's John Williams, but it sounds John Williams-y.
We can find out very quickly.
Music. John Barry. Conducted and composed by John Barry Pendergast, who also did the James Bond theme, apparently. But yeah, it's the big sweeping music. It's amazing. And that movie is my Indiana Jones in a lot of ways.
This soundtrack has never been released on CD.
Wow.
You know why?
You can buy
it's
an LP.
Too good.
And it was made available on iTunes.
It's too good for all of those normal people who listen to CDs. Only us vinyl fanatics like me and Zach. We love our vinyl. We can go buy it on vinyl.
I don't believe you.
Soundtrack by John Small.
My first car had a actual record player in the back seat. You don't tell me I don't love vinyl.
They had a whole DJ just back there.
With some glow sticks swinging them around at night. Those were Matthew's headlights. Yep. Rodrigo, what do you have for number one?
My number one is a soundtrack that is very... obviously, you want your soundtrack to highlight your action, and you want kind of them to match, but I think this soundtrack goes a lot farther than that. It's kind of transgressive, because the movie that it's a part of is transgressive, and it kind of like attacks you, and it's like, ah, God, what is happening to my face while I'm watching this movie?
Yeah.
It's awful and great at the same time. I'm talking about Pi. And soundtrack for Pi is great. It's great to listen to. This is another one where I can put a movie score into my CD player, because the soundtrack for Pi was released on CD. Listen to it. And it's great electronic music. And actually, the soundtrack is put together in such a way that it flows together very well. For me, Pi is a very important movie. It's kind of a sublime experience, in a lot of ways, and the soundtrack was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, it's hard for me to even quantify how good this soundtrack is. I would urge people to go watch Pi.
Yep. P.I. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Just
on iTunes.
Yep.
Go eat Pi as well.
Yes. Although you might, if you're prone to getting dizzy, you might not be want to watch Pi while you eat Pi.
Yes.
But yes, go watch it, then pick up the soundtrack, and also listen to that.
Yeah.
Zach?
Is that an Aronofsky?
Yes. It was kind of his first one. Yeah, his breakaway film.
Yeah, that's why you get dizzy. Okay.
We've also talked about that on Zach on Film.
That's right.
Yeah, that was another really early one.
Yep.
My number one is a movie that kind of set me off on this like noticeable trek of recognizing scores and like appreciating them for more than just kind of barely absorbing them while I watch a movie. And it was when I watched Drive with Ryan Gosling in it. The score and soundtrack of that movie, Ryan Gosling's character rarely talks in the film, and so like the electronic music that's in there really kind of speaks for him in terms of like shows his like internal feelings, especially like in car chases and different situations. It's really good, and like it is like it is on one, like, if you buy it, it's one album, but it splits, like, the actual songs, begins, like, the, like, backing electronic music, and the first five songs I'd never really listened to before or even heard anything they're about, but they're awesome. I really enjoy that album. If you haven't watched Drive, it's a pretty good movie. It's, I mean, it's okay. It's not, like, the best, like, yeah, noir thing you're gonna...
Yeah.
It's super freaking violent. It's
yeah, it is. Especially the elevator at the end.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Have you seen it?
Nope.
You don't want
to. It's nothing you really need to go out and watch. But I really enjoy the soundtrack, and it kind of is important to me and like looking at soundtracks from the future.
I'll just say this. It takes Curb Stomping to a whole new level.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it went... It's, in the original cut, it was worse. They were going to get NC-17 if they didn't cut out parts of that elevator.
Yeah, but they still left...
Oh, they left a lot in.
Yeah.
But they would have got worse.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you go, our number ones. There are some also-rans that may have made our lists. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Trent Reznor's Social Network.
Oh, holy crap.
Would have been excellent on there, on mine. As is the original Mortal Kombat soundtrack, which also had the soundtrack and the pop soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Those together. I remember just when I moved to California, I would just sit there at my desk coding all day, and I would just be listening to the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Yeah. I love that.
And then they come into Orbital and a bunch of other groups.
Yeah, I'll say that I am really surprised not to have seen the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh,
it's on my also rants. Yeah. That's an amazing soundtrack. Mm-hmm. That one's incredible.
I mean, we talked about Aladdin a little bit. That was good stuff. Mm-hmm. I really dig the Cloud Atlas score.
Yeah.
It's really good. Upstream Color was the second film.
That's
from
Aronofs?
No, it's Shane Carth,
who did
Primer.
Yeah.
He did his own score for Upstream Color.
Yeah, that's
I actually have it on vinyl.
You're ready for one that will surprise you. Zack Snyder, the Dawn of the Dead remake, has incredible use of music. They have the Richard Cheese version of Down with the Sickness in an important scene where, you know, they're in the mall, they're surrounded by zombies. It's kind of ridiculous, and they throw in this song that has these incredibly dark lyrics that's done in this ridiculous style. It really is an amazing use of music throughout that whole movie.
If you want to talk about zombie movies with really well done jukeboxes, Shaun of the Dead
is really good.
Yeah.
And of course, if you want to throw in another John Williams Superman.
Yeah.
Why not?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have given you our top five. Now it's time for you to head over to the Major Spoilers Podcast posting page. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah.
And share your top five soundtracks from movies. What is it going to be? Is it going to be something awesome? I'm sure it is because it's your top five. And we're going to enjoy reading them because everybody loves a list. And we will talk with you soon.
Godzilla 1998.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit majorspoilers@majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers Forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers.